Good morning. We're going to go ahead and get started with the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division meeting. We appreciate that we've got a lot of things on our agenda today, and we also have people who are in and out because they have bills in other committees, and so we will accommodate people maybe a little bit differently from the layout of the agenda. Just be aware of that because we've got people who have traveled quite a distance to be here. We're going to try and accommodate them, and we're going to try and make sure that we can get everything done. But at the beginning here, I'm just going to we have the March 19th minutes, so Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes for March 19th.
All right. Is there any questions, any additions, corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Right. Any opposed, no. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. So with this full agenda, we're going to hopefully have the opportunity to have some discussion about some things, but all of these bills are being laid over for possible inclusion. So as we move into that phase of doing things, you'll perhaps have an opportunity to talk about some of these bills in the coming weeks. So, but right now we're going to get started. This is House File 2200 that we're getting started with, which is the governor recommendation, the department's budget bill recommendation. And just so you know, this is going to be our bill that we'll eventually be adding and subtracting from, but this is going to be the department bringing forward this bill. So welcome to the committee, and I'll just state your name and begin the testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. My name is Andrea Vobel. I'm Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And with me, I've got Peter Chesset, our Director of Government Affairs for the department.
Good.
So I'll just quickly, I know in the interest of time, I'll just go quickly. We've already gone through the budget items in the governor's budget. So I'll just go through the bill section by section just to point out where our budget items are contained within that bill. So I'll start on page 2 with subdivision 2 protection services. So we do have an increase there for the biennium of $6,465,000. That includes, I'm talking in biennial numbers, money for our noxious weeds program, that's $1.8 million. Our meat inspection program at $500,000. Our hemp program at $600,000. And our critical core capacity for plant pathogens and pests, that's at $500,000. That is not written in within the rider language, but it is contained in the overall budget number that's under that appropriation by fund. You'll point out on page 3.9, there is the one-time appropriation for our lab services to replace capital equipment. It is a one-time appropriation, so $1,110,000 in the first year and $1,030,000 in the second year. We also contain the ag emergency money. That is $625,000 in the first year. That is $325,000 one time to put money into the ag emergency account. And then the $300,000 for operating funds ongoing for our Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response. Then I'll head down to Subdivision 3 for Agricultural Marketing and Development section. That is an overall increase of $626,000 for the biennium. That does include the $500,000 for our ag trade and marketing program, as well as $126,000 for the biennium for our farm and rural helpline and the programmatic things we want to do for rural mental health, which includes things that we're going to do with some of the media outlets around the state.
And Deputy Commissioner Belville, just as you're going through, if you can identify line and pages and
yes.
things like that, it would be appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. We'll just keep going. Nothing has changed. I'll bring your attention to page 5, subdivision 4, agriculture, bioenergy, and bioproduct advancement. There's no fiscal change to this, but there are some changes within the rider language that we made to get more in line with some things that would make the agri program work better for us. So one of those changes is page 7, line 7.27. It reads, the commissioner may use up to $2 million per year of the funds appropriated under the subdivision to award value-added agriculture grants of between $200,000 and $1 million per grant. for new or expanding agriculture production or processing facilities that provide significant economic impact to the region. The slight change and reason for that was last biennium we had the language read that it was up to $2 million for two grants. We've gotten some requests for other programs over the $200,000 that we were typically doing beforehand. And so the language, the way the language read, it wouldn't allow us to fund those kinds of projects. Specifically, there was one meat processing plant for $300,000. So this just gets in line, I think, with the overall spirit of the law, which was to provide additional funding for some of those bigger projects around the state that add value to agricultural products. On page 8, we're at subdivision 5, administration and financial assistance. That's line 8.23. That is an overall biennial increase of $324,000. And you'll see on page 9, line 9.11, $267,000 the first year and $267,000 the second year are for farm advocate services. So the base before that was $220,000. This is an increase of $47,000 per year. That's for two new farm advocates and an hourly rate increase for our farm advocates who are already in the program and will be added to the program. Line 9.16, item G, is the $228,000 the first year and $228,000 the second year. That is a transfer to Minsky, Minnesota State. That includes the money for TED, who we've talked a lot about in this committee, as well as the additional $115,000 for another TED. And so that pass-through goes, again, to Minnesota State. So the rest of it contains a whole bunch of other information, but the lines that only change are page 13, line 13.36. We changed the date for agri grants. We've run into this a couple of times, particularly for our sustainable ag grants and our crop research grants, that they need three growing seasons to really get the research information that they need. And so right now we're only allowed to do two-year grants. So that would allow us to continue those grants, particularly with folks at the university. And so on page, I'll continue on. On page 18, line 18.33, you'll see language that says the commissioner may use up to $5,000 of this appropriation the second year to reimburse expenses incurred by university extension agents to provide fair market values of destroyed or crippled livestock. Typically through our wolf and elk compensation program, we've had university extension agents that have helped value the damage that's occurred for producers. This allows us to provide some funding out of that already existing appropriation to pay some of those extension agents. A lot of times they're paid by their counties, and so sometimes we'll have to have them go to different counties to value the damage that's taken place, and so this just gives them a little bit of room for extension to pay for those services. Again, it's not an additional $5,000, it's just a $5,000 out of the already existing account, and we feel, based upon the number of claims we received, that we can float that number very easily. And then the last change is on page 23, line 23.33. Again, that's a year change that is just consistent, again, as I said, with the three-year grants, particularly for our crop research and our sustainable ag grants that we give out through Agri. And so with that, Madam Chair, that's the quick walkthrough of our bill.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Questions by committee members? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Deputy Commissioner, so what's the total dollar increase that's being asked?
Good question. Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, the total ask is $7,415,000 over the biennium.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, I didn't hear you mention anything specifically about the dairy farming or helping support dairies. On page 9, you're keeping the grants to Second Harvest Heartland the same as previously. Anything specifically in the budget that would be directed at helping our dairy industry?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, so we have been, we just released an RFP with existing agri-funds within FY19 to help those who are about to lose their grade A status or to help them get grade A or maintain their grade A status up to $10,000 each. We also knew that there were a number of ideas out there about things to do for dairy, and so we decided to just hold off and see what things came from other ideas from milk producers around the state. So we certainly are aware that something needs to be done, and so we're very open to that, but it's not contained in this budget.
All right, any other questions? All right, yeah, Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and maybe I missed this, but is there going to be a supplemental adjustment tomorrow?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, that's my understanding, that we'll learn about a revised budget tomorrow.
All right. So we'll be waiting for that. I think, is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak regarding this bill? This is, as we said, House Bill 2200 is kind of our base. We'll be making some adjustments to that next week, in the coming weeks. So, all right. If there's seeing no further comments or questions, thank you for the presentation. Appreciate that. I know, again, like I mentioned, we have people who are here and moving back and forth between committees, but we've got some bills before us. So Representative Anderson has a couple of, and we can do the one that you wanted to do to make a swap there a little bit. So if we do House File 2021, you want to do that one first, Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, I think we're moving along quickly. It doesn't really make any difference.
Okay.
We can do the other one first. That would be fine.
Okay, sure. So House File 915. And Representative Anderson, do you want to move your bill?
Madam Chair, yes, I'd like to move House File 915 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you. So if you would, did you have any amendment to this one?
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe there is a DE, although I don't see it.
I don't either. Is there a DE in there? Nothing in the packet. Thank you. I think we'll start with the other bill first then.
Okay.
Sorry, because yes, unless that's not what you're distributing. No, we need to get the DE amendment because that's critical to the difference of what that bill is. So apologize for that. So we're just going to lay that one over for temporarily here, and we will go to House File 2021, our original plan. So Representative Anderson, now would you like to move this bill?
Again, Madam Chair, we should have started with this one first anyway. Yes, I'd like to move House File 2021 for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Finance Bill.
And this one, I think, is good to go. We don't have any amendments to this one. So, Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members. This bill is a result of some things that have happened in the grain industry the last 4 or 5 years, the last one occurring this past year at a co-op elevator up in Ashby, Minnesota, where some farmers thought they had grain there, and it turns out the grain was not there. And some farmers are standing to lose pretty sizable sums of money in terms of what they had in the elevator and what was actually there. What this does, Madam Chair, members, is establish an indemnity fund for producers in Minnesota. It's copied after a similar fund that is in effect in our neighboring state of North Dakota. And I realize that I'm a farmer. I don't really want to see any more checkoffs coming out of my grain checks, but if we ever want to establish a fund of any size that would be capable of restoring losses and a sizable loss to an elevator, I think this is the only way to do it. The bond that elevators have is not designed to cover losses such as that occur in some of these situations. In the case of Ashby, I believe their bond was $125,000, and the losses that I've heard so far from the department are about $2.5 million. So they stand to get back about 9 to 10 cents on the dollar from that bond that the elevator had. What this bill does is establish a collection fee on deferred contracts of grain only, not on cash contracts, just on deferred contracts, because I think that's where the greatest risk is. If a farmer sells grain on a cash basis, he should get his check promptly and wouldn't have that risk associated with an elevator over a longer period of time. So a key point here is this establishes a fee of 0.2% on deferred contracts if those contracts are held for 60 days or fewer, and that fee kicks up to 0.3% if the deferred contracts are for more than 60 days. It is a blink-off type of fund, similar to what we have in the petrol fund currently in Minnesota. It would ramp up to a total of $6 million, and if it were ever used, we hope it isn't used, but if it were, $6 million, I should back up. When it gets to $6 million, the fund would blink off and to stay at that total, and if the fund ever were to be used, it would, if it depletes back down to $3 million, it would blink back on again to keep it in that that range of having enough money in the fund to cover any potential losses. And the caveat I put in there for the farming industry would be that to get this fund jump-started, the state would kick in the first $2 million to get this fund going and get it established and get it up and running. And in talking with folks at the department, they estimated that the breakdown between cash sales and deferred sales of grain are pretty close to 50-50, 55-45 in that neighborhood. So again, this would affect only the deferred contracts between the buyer and seller. And with the first $2 million coming in from the state, and then the fund would kick up to $6 million, blink off, and if it were ever used, it would come back into effect when it drops down to $3 million. With that, Madam Chair, I know there are folks that have feelings on this type of a bill, and I would entertain questions and then your testifiers, or my testifiers.
Thank you. I think, why don't we call down your testifiers?
Okay.
So it looks like we have... Josie Linetti is coming down. Welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
You can provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Josie Linetti, Associate Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Thanks for the opportunity to provide brief comments this morning. Minnesota Farm Bureau is the state's largest general farm organization, consisting of nearly 30,000 farm and ranch families across all of Minnesota's 87 counties. Minnesota Farm Bureau is respectfully opposed to House File 2021. We believe to protect farmers, it's more prudent to prevent a problem from happening in the first place than try to rectify a situation that's already occurred. We want to ensure that farmers are protected and that they have the resources to continue farming. We've appreciated the department's grain advisory group and the discussions that we've had over the last couple of months looking at different avenues to address elevator insolvency situations. And we look forward to continuing those conversations. So with that, again, Minnesota Farm Bureau is opposed to House File 2021. Thank you.
Thank you. I know that we also have Patrick Murray on the list, and then I know Gary Wirtish, who is also interested in speaking. So bring down Mr. So welcome to the committee. If you introduce yourself and then provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Patrick Murray. I'm with Cooperative Network. We're a two-state trade association of over 250 cooperative members in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We appreciate Representative Anderson bringing this bill forward. We appreciate Representative Anderson joining our Farm Supply Committee members just yesterday in St. Paul to talk about this very bill as well as House File 915. The takeaway that our members have on the bill as well as folks that we brought in for our co-op day at the Capitol 2 days ago was that they are opposed to this bill, House File 2021. An assessment on the agriculture industry, our farmers, our member owners would be something that in this tough economic time already for farmers, we would be opposed to. In fact, some of our members commented that instead of putting additional dollars into such a program, they would rather see the money coming into their bank account. A lot of them are having tough financial times. So additional dollars going into this program would be something that us and our members are opposed to. I would also like to thank the Department of Agriculture for bringing forward the Grain Advisory Group. We participated in many of those meetings since last fall. We appreciate the conversation. We know it's a sensitive time. Obviously, the situation in Ashby and Porter are very difficult for those farmers and those members. But we do think things such as education up front, at least from a cooperative board member perspective, is something that our organization provides to our members. Ashby Elevator is not a member of our organization, so we don't have a relationship with them. But, again, very sensitive times for those members. And we want to continue to work on this legislation as well as the other bill Representative Anderson is bringing forward. So with that, respectfully, again, we do oppose the bill, but we thank you for bringing it forward, Representative.
Thank you. And Representative Miller, do you have a question for this testifier?
I'm trying to wait till after.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Murray. I think Mr. Wirtish might actually be in support of your bill, so he might actually be your testifier, right? I apologize that we got it out there, but welcome to the committee, Mr. Wirtish.
Good morning, Madam Chair and representatives. I'm Gary Wirtish, president of the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I would like to commend Representative Anderson bringing this bill forward. Farmers Union, we strongly support this. Everybody wants to support farmers. You know, farmers are, right now, it's been previously mentioned that we're going through a tough economic times. There's no doubt about that. You go through a much tougher time if you have your grain delivered to an elevator and all of a sudden you don't get a check. And when you do finally get a check after some years of maybe it's 10 cents a dollar, those farmers are not going to be farming. The very possibility. We went through this, and I sit on the Grain Advisory Committee, too, at the Department of Ag, and I appreciate them for bringing that forward. You know, after the Porter elevator then went belly up, I guess is the way to say it, the Department of Ag put together the Grain Advisory Group, and we heard that time this can't happen to a co-op. That was a private, and there's very few privates left in the state. It can't happen to the co-op because co-ops, their records, they're audited, and they have a board of directors, and their financials are audited, and they're available to the members. So nothing happened, and now we had Ashby. Ashby was a co-op. Then you hear, well, maybe, and it's probably true, or it is true. You know, the board of directors probably was a little derelict in their duty, but the other thing that is kind of not mentioned, too, is as a board director on a co-op or any entity, if there's fraud within the elevator, you're liable. Your director's, your D&O insurance does not cover a director. And I think, you know, a lot of directors aren't aware of that. We, a few weeks back, the Grain Advisory Committee, the Department of Ag brought in Jay Combe and Roger, forget his last name right now, with Schultz and Carlson. Very well respected auditing firm out of New Ulm. They do they're very extensive in auditing cooperatives, not only in Minnesota but in the Midwest region. And very good discussions. You know, obviously, we all support more board training, and that's obviously what we want to do. But Jake mentioned that in a case of a fraud, an audit, there's things that'll fall through the cracks. He says in an audit. An audit will only catch 3 to 5% of fraud cases. They'll eventually catch them. But if you're the farmer that's delivered grain to the elevator, and before the auditor catches it, maybe a couple possibly catch it, and you get stuck in the middle, you're the one left holding the bag. So we very strongly support this bill. We had an extensive discussion at a full board meeting about a month ago, and I think that the farmers out throughout the state, if they realize that bond, the little that bond will actually protect them, it really doesn't protect them, and increasing the bond amount to actually protect them, that's not going to happen either because the elevators will say they can't afford it, and it's probably true. So, you know, farmers, we used to buy, we buy insurance for everything. We buy crop insurance. We buy hail insurance. We buy insurance on our car. This is an insurance product that actually, it's the only thing out there that will actually protect the farmer if an elevator goes bankrupt in a case of fraud. You know, we like to think that everybody's honest, but things happen. CHS, is a very respected cooperative, the largest one in our state, and actually the largest in the country, one of the top four, five, or one of the top Fortune 500 companies. They have a professional staff. They have an extensive staff, extensive county department, and their board directors, I would assume, are going through a very high-level professional board training. Just in the last year or two, there was misrepresented in their financials on freight. It was a few million dollars. It didn't cost the elevator to go to bank or the company to go bankrupt. And it didn't, but it did probably show up in the amount of dividend that the farmers got back from CHS. So, well, you know, we support board training, we support all that stuff, but this Representative Anderson's bill is the only thing that'll actually support the farmer. We don't want to get in a turf battle, you know, the versus checkoff and non-checkoff and that type of stuff. But his two-tenths of 1%, that's like a dollar on that amount, that's $1.40 an acre, or $1.20 an acre that would have cost the farmer. If a farmer raises, I'll use 200 bushel corn. That's kind of what's the standard, and that's what we raise in our area. If you take that 200 bushel of corn, you sell it for $3 a bushel, that's $600 gross an acre. The farmer on a corn checkoff, he's going to pay $2 an acre to that corn checkoff. In a Representative Anderson's bill, at 0.002%, he's going to pay $1.20 per acre. And if it jumps up to the 0.003, that's $1.80. It's still less than we're paying in checkoff fees. So it's a one-time fee. Hopefully it's only one-time checkoff that builds up to $6 million and never used again. That'd be the greatest thing that could happen if it was never used. But I think if the farmers really understood this is in their best interest, it would actually protect them. There would be very vast support of the farmers for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wirtish. I know we have another testifier. Bob Zelenka would like to also testify, so bring him down as well, and then and or somebody else. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Laura Lemke. I'm the assistant director with the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. Being that Bob Zelenka is going to be retiring soon, and this will be my job, we figured I'd take a few moments and talk about the House File 2021. The Minnesota Grain and Feed Association respectfully does not support House File 2021. We think that indemnity fund encourages risky behavior. I could use a sample or example from North Dakota. They have an issue going on up there right now where they had a grain buyer that was a young guy and went out and he was promoting that he would pay 5-10 cents over what a co-op elevator could do. And I think right now with crop prices being low, with the tariff issue, a lot of farmers, that was attractive to them, and they took that risk and they got burned. This individual is now, I think last I heard, it was between $5 and $10 million worth of losses. So we don't support it because of, we think it encourages risky behavior. Beyond that, as the representative from Farmers Union had mentioned, bonds are not meant to protect farmers. Bonds are a screening process by a third party that looks at a entity's financials. So all it is a screening process. It is not meant to make anyone whole if there is an elevator failure. There is an insurance product out there that farmers could purchase. It's a deferred payment insurance. It costs $10 a thousand, and farmers can buy that if they really want to protect their interests. We are also part of the grain advisory group that MDA put together. We appreciate being part of that. We think there's a lot of good ideas that have come out of that, and at this point we'd like to continue talking about this particular piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bunke. Mr. Zelenka, would you like to make a comment as well? No? Okay. We do have some questions, so we'll open it up to questions, Representative Anderson. So we'll start. Representative Miller has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to point this at Representative Anderson, my question, but there may be some of your previous testifiers that jumped in on this. And I'm thankful that the testifiers went first because they answered about the bonding, why that couldn't be increased. I can agree with that. But what about in other industries, like I think of securities is the best example, and it's not too different from this, really, when you think about it. They have errors and omissions insurance, okay? And that covers stuff like this. So can there be a requirement for co-ops to have errors and omission insurance? Now, it takes away from the incentivizing bad behavior because it's the co-op that is having to do this. I got to believe that because this is a pretty rare problem, let's hope it stays nice and rare, but the insurance product shouldn't be too expensive. I mean, it should just be a very minimal cost. And I'm just wondering, if this doesn't work, if that's something that we can pursue. Now, I probably have attorneys in the room who are probably doing backflips on why it doesn't work, but I think that's the sort of conversation that I think that is viable. I just want to know what Representative Anderson thinks about that.
Thanks, Madam Chair and Representative Miller. Yeah, we've talked about that, and the issue of fraud enters in here. And the lawyers that I've talked with say that if we go back, look at Ashby, there was fraud, but it was not fraud by the board of directors. And so, again, I'm not quite sure if their errors and omissions policy would be in effect then, but if there's fraud on the manager's part, that would exclude him from being covered, as I understand it.
Madam Chair?
And Representative Miller.
My understanding, like in securities, is that errors and omissions covers board members. And actually, I've been part of nonprofits where they've had to address this, too. Christian schools, you don't want to have a problem. Board members and officers are covered under these. And I suppose that depending on the circumstances, if the person involved isn't technically a board member or an officer, that there's some sort of relatable thing. I just, Madam Chair, I think it's something that should be pursued. It shouldn't be too expensive. And anyway, so.
All right. Thank you, Representative Miller. I don't know if you had a comment back, Representative.
Madam Chair and members, yeah, I'm on a co-op board, and we have errors and omissions insurance. Township boards have errors and omissions insurance. County boards have it. I think it would behoove any board to carry that type of insurance.
I think what we can do is we can have our researchers probably do some investigating of that and be able to let us know if that's a possibility or not.
I was just going to say my understanding is in talking to auditors as if it is a fraud case, even though it's by the manager, the board of directors is still responsible and that the errors and omissions would not cover them.
Thank you. Next we have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. You know, I had constituents that were harmed in fraud and corruption cases, the prominent names that we've heard over the last 10 years that ripped off people. I see no way of giving state general tax dollars to this. It's just you have to get the special master and have the go after the assets, and there has to be consequences. If the people who are on the board of directors didn't understand what they were doing, they have to face the consequences. But I just cannot support general tax dollars going in to cover indemnity for fraud and corruption.
Are there any other questions or comments from the committee members? Anyone else in the audience that wanted to speak for or against House File 2021? Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just the topic of bonding was brought up in current statute in Minnesota for an organization that does over $24 million in business in any one year. Their bond requirement is $150,000. So, again, the bond is not required, is not intended to cover losses such as this. So the indemnity fund would be, the only way to get a sum large enough to cover a potential large loss. But, again, Madam Chair, I understand the pros and cons of it. I sat on this bill in my office for weeks and attended the last meeting of the Grain Advisory Group and decided to drop the bill to get the conversation going and talk about the pros and cons of this. And it's a farmer-helping-farmer type of bill, aside from that original put-in from the state general fund. But, again, Madam Chair, I would move this House File 21 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. The bill is laid over. So now we will go to House File 915. And Representative Anderson, you may, we'll bring that back up. You've moved the bill. Now we've got a DE amendment. So I believe everyone should have that. And I think the page has additional copies and or they are available if people would like to get those. So, Representative Anderson, if you would like to move that amendment.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment to House File 915.
Okay. So you'll want to maybe describe what the amendment is briefly so that we can act on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I originally dropped House File 915 to just increase the auditing requirements of firms that just do grain buying. There's two types of licenses in Minnesota, one for grain buying and the other for grain storage. And there really are no requirements right now for any level of auditing of firms that simply buy grain and do not store it. So what the original bill did was require an audit each year of grain buyer licensees. And then I mentioned I attended the last meeting of the grain advisory group, and the amendment came out of that, Madam Chair, and where the recommendations put forth by the folks on that committee along with Department of Ag people. And I think I'd like to call one of those people down to explain the language that they had included in my original bill as an amendment. And hopefully the testimony is a little more friendly this time.
Okay, so we'll do that. And since you've moved that amendment, and that is going to be the bill, we're just going to take a vote on the amendment. That's your author's amendment. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Okay, the motion prevails. So the bill is amended. It is before us. And so hopefully we'll start you out with the people that are friendliest to your proposal here. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name and then provide your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Milanowski. I am the Fruit, Vegetable, and Grain Section Manager of Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mentioned discussion of the last bill, we established a grain advisory group in the summer of 2018 in response to the insolvency of the Porter Elevator, which occurred in 2015. In that discussion, we have talked about ways to protect producers and as well as ways to potentially identify fraud or have more in-depth inspections and make sure that we are doing our due diligence to protect the grain that's in storage and the grain that's sold by producers in Minnesota. We pulled together industry representatives, both representatives of elevators and also producers, as part of that grain advisory group. And the two major things that came out of that were to require inspections for all grain buyers and grain storage facilities. Currently, in statute, there's only a requirement for grain storage facilities to be inspected. Grain buyer facilities are not required in statute to have those inspections. The other recommendation that we put forth was a requirement for facilities to have either an audited financial review or an audited financial summary or a reviewed financial summary. And the difference there is audited is held at a higher level, review is held at a lower level. But through the advice that we had gotten from Carlson SV, the accountants that specialize in grain accounting, they thought that both would be sufficient to potentially identify errors in accounting or issues that would affect producers selling grain and storing grain. Those were two major recommendations that came from that grain advisory group, and I'd be happy to elaborate if there are any questions.
All right. I don't see any questions right now. Representative Anderson, did you have other people that wanted to testify, or do you want to further describe, because I know we have people on the list, but I just want to make sure if you had.
No, just Madam Chair, as the testifier mentioned, this bill would differentiate a cash buyer is one who deals in a total of less than $100,000 per year, strictly on a cash basis, and would not be required to have an audit. And the review would be required of the buyers that do less than $2 million, and the full audit would be required if they do over $2 million of business. But with the the fact that the audits are expensive, and the smaller firms, you know, it may be a financial expense that is difficult to cover, so we tried to keep in mind the size of the firm and the auditing required to do a good job and to make sure that things are on the up and up.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. All right, so we have some other people on the list. I'm just going to go again. Josie Linetti is on the list. So if you want to come down and welcome again to the committee, please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. I can be a little friendlier this time. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Minnesota Farm Bureau has been an active participant on the Grant Advisory Group since this past August. We've really appreciated the avenue of communication to have with the department to address issues of elevator insolvency. We are especially supportive of the pieces in House File 915 that would address doing audits or annual reviews on a regular basis. We think this is a significant deterrent to fraudulent practices if someone is aware that financials are going to be reviewed by an outside party on an ongoing and regular basis. So with that, we appreciate the committee hearing this bill and the work that the department has done, as well as Representative Anderson for bringing this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Gary Wirtish, please come forward. Again, welcome to the committee and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair and representatives, I'm always friendly. We're always friendly. It's good. It's, you know, we appreciate Paul. You know, there aren't many of us farmers left. You know, there's less than around 70,000 in the state. So I guess that's, you know, that's my focus. You know, we want to keep that and we want to grow it. You know, and it's a challenge, but we certainly support Representative Anderson's bill, you know, House File 915. Because any more work we can do on audit, you know, it's part of the piece, part of the puzzle as we go forward, and appreciate and strongly support this bill moving forward too. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Murray. Patrick Murray is on the list. Welcome again.
Madam Chair, thank you once again. Representative Anderson, thank you again for bringing forward the amended version of House File 915. Our organization does support this bill. It is a culmination of the grain advisory meetings that we've had with the department. A lot of these are good ideas. A lot of these are ideas and practices that are already done by our cooperative members, from the inspections to the audits. Our board directors are locked in what they need to do to run their cooperatives. And I guess I would say the components of House File 915 may help to not necessarily prevent what we would want to do with House File 2021, but could prevent such incidences that have happened with Porter and Ashby, with having more audits and inspections. So, and I know that was not the case potentially with those two situations. So we support House File 915. We appreciate you bringing it forward again, Representative Anderson, and we look forward to working with you, members of the committee and the department, through these two bills.
Thank you. And Patrick, if you just state your name again for the
yes,
record.
Yes, apologize. Patrick Murray with Cooperative Network.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And then this time, is it going to be Bob Zielenka or... okay, so we're going to have Bob Zielenka come down. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Zielenka, Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent the interests of grain elevators and feed mills around the state. We have 350 grain elevators with 500 locations, employing close to 8,000 people statewide. We participated in the Grain Advisory Committee group and do support House File 915. I feel it's a very strong step forward to provide the kind of protections necessary that our industry needs, that producers need, which includes primarily additional audits as well as the measure up, which was missing in the Ashby situation. Grain buyers weren't required to be measured in terms of what kind of grain they had in store, and that was part of the major problem in that situation. With that said, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer that, but thank you for your time.
Thank you. And sorry, I have nobody else on the list, but I have questions. So, Representative Cleavon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Representative Anderson, I'm just curious. I didn't see a fiscal note attached to your amendment. Is there a fiscal note for that?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative, there isn't as of right now. There will be some increased fees associated with these new audits and
Representative Anderson, we can actually ask Mr. Savory if there's We won't leave you out there hanging. We're going to provide some help here. Yeah. So, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, so the original bill as it stands, House File 915, before the committee incorporated the DE amendment, there was a fiscal note and preliminary status for that, and that does show some additional preliminary costs to the Department of Agriculture. But now that the bill has changed substantially with the DE amendment, I'll have to go back with the department to reconfigure the bill as it stands now, as the committee has enacted the DE.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Cleburne.
One more follow-up then on the fiscal analysis. Because of the number of elevators that would be involved, is it, in your best guess, would it still be the addition of four full-time equivalents going forward?
Mr. Savory?
It's a best guess.
Madam Chair and members, I don't know if I would say guess publicly on it, but I think that the FTE portion is part of the discussion of how much the bill obviously costs. And I think because the DE substantially changes the bill with the additional language, we'll have to take another look on where those FTEs would potentially fall.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And Representative Anderson, now I can let you, if you had more to state about that.
Yeah, in the discussions about making changes to require grain buyers to be audited, the department had a requirement earlier that the storage folks be audited twice per year. That's going to be dropped back down to only once. So there will be some savings from dropping that portion down to one, but then picking up the buyers. So I think four would be on the high side, but again, we'll have to redo it again and see what the exact cost would be.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from committee? Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, thank you for this bill today. You know, I feel for the farmers in Ashby-Dalton area. I mean, they're on the hook, right? They still have to pay back that loan, which is unfortunate. I also feel for the other co-ops that might go through this process in the future. But I guess, you know, this bill addresses some of it, but I don't think it really, in my mind, it doesn't solve all of the issues because the bank still gave the loan without checking to make sure that the elevator had the collateral. And so I guess my question, and I'll just leave it open, what can we do to address that portion of it so that way there's multiple steps in the checks and balances so that way this doesn't happen again?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Brand, what I'm trying to deal with here is protecting the farmers. Mm-hmm. And if the co-op takes a larger loan with whoever they would work with, I would think it would be up to that bank or whomever to make sure that that loan collateral is there. That's one of the pieces that a bond would do, is to make sure their financials are in order. So I haven't taken that step going after tightening up standards between the banks and the co-ops. This just deals with the farmers. Yeah, you're correct on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Brand.
I'd like to work with you or work with somebody to try to address that because, you know, again, that could have been a way that the bank could have said, well, hold on a second, I can't give you this loan. You guys don't have that collateral to do that. And I think this guy, this jerk from Ashby that kind of ruined it for a lot of farmers, you know, I mean, he lived a lavish lifestyle, but he did it in a fraudulent way. And I think we really ought to address that in the future so that way other people aren't sold a bill of goods that damages whole communities and puts farmers at risk of not being farmers anymore.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, yeah, there's criminal proceedings underway. I don't really want to comment on that, but there are things going on in the legal system, and they're looking at assets and property and such. And, again, that's far beyond what I'm attempting here.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Any other questions around the table here? Anybody else who wants to testify in support or opposition to House File 915, as amended? So, Representative Anderson, closing comments.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a final comment to give you some understanding of the money an elevator handles from buying grain from farmers and then reselling it. If we're during harvest season combining on a weekend and haul grain into the elevator, we really can't sell it because the Chicago Board of Trade is not open on weekends, and the elevator can't hedge that grain that we would sell and cover if the market would drop on Monday morning. So it's a business that handles a lot of money, and you really have to protect yourself on both sides of the market, and just the realization that there's a lot of the sum of money worked on by farmers and elevators can be large, and I strongly believe that House File 915 starts a process of better auditing on grain buyers, and that would give some measure of protection to farmers who sell grain to a business advised grain. With that, Madam Chair, I'd remove my motion for House File 915 as amended, the DE1 amendment to be included possibly in the omnibus ag finance bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. All right, we're moving on. Now we're going to make an adjustment here. Sorry, Representative Keel. I know you have somebody, so you you have your person here. We'll go to Keel next. We can go to Keel if you want to do, and then we're going to go to Fabian right after Keel, because I know both of you have people from a long distance. So if we can do that, so if we'll go to Keel, Representative Keel, and then just as a clarification, so we're going to go to Keel, then Fabian, then we're going to go to Hansen, if he's here, and then we will go to Tabke, probably, then Lippert. So just so you know, there's going to be a little bit of adjustment, and I apologize, I actually have to leave because I have a bill in another committee, so Representative Brand will take over, but you have your testifiers here, and I appreciate that they've come a long distance, so thank you, Representative Keel, and if you want to go ahead and move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Yes. Chair, I would like to move House File 2123 for possible inclusion to the Ag Finance Bill, Omnibus Bill.
Thank you. And so you can present your bill and introduce your witnesses. Thank you.
Thank you. In light of the bills and presentation of time, I will just make this really a quick introduction. House File 2123, is a new idea. Very excited to bring this forward. I live in Polk County and farm and raise soybeans along with many other of my neighbors and friends. And the area is very plentiful in soybeans, and this is an opportunity for us to expand soybeans in Minnesota. And with that, I have a few testifiers, so I will introduce them and let them explain the plan.
Chair, committee members, my name is Dennis Egan. I'm the president and CEO of Epitome Energy. We conducted a feasibility study over the last couple of years to look at a new crushing facility and biodiesel plant in the state of Minnesota. And out of that, we've developed many partnerships, one of that being the Minnesota Soybean Promotion Council. We've been working with AURI, Department of Ag, identifying a location to build this plant. But out of that, it became a much larger conversation, and we're here presenting to you today a Minnesota Soybean Innovation Center. We have looked at 100 acres in Crookston because of the proximity to beans. 1.8 million acres of beans are planted in 11 county area around the Crookston area. And you'll hear from one of the local growers about the significance of that. So there's really four components of this innovation center to start with. The first being a 30 million gallon biodiesel plant. In the state of Minnesota, in order for us to meet our mandate, we currently are importing 40 million gallons of biodiesel. We think that having this new facility will help with that mandate. In addition to that, on the crushing side, because of the plentiful amount of beans and no value add in that neck of the woods, we're proposing a crushing facility of 21 to 22 million bushels of beans a year. And then the significant piece of this, too, is this small crushing facility, which will enable the Minnesota Soybean Research Promotion Council and others to really bring new varieties of beans to the marketplace. One of the big hiccups right now is when research is being done at the University of Minnesota and the amount of money that the soybean promotion checkoffs have spent on promoting these bean varieties, there's nowhere to take that in an economical way. So we're proposing much smaller a mechanical crush facility that will enable that to happen. And then the fourth component of this is the relationship with the University of Cookston and the University of Minnesota in the research component. We're proposing to have labs and teaching facilities on site to further train not only the researchers, but also how do we process beans and other varieties that are being talked about, not just in northwest Minnesota, but the bean varieties and the other small grain varieties that have been talked about not only in this committee, but also at the University of Minnesota, and Mike will touch on that. When we did this survey, we really looked at, in the feasibility study, looked at three main components. How do we bring value to the local grower? How do we even out the markets? And we saw what's happened with the China, and so bringing value add to northwest Minnesota is pretty significant. And then how do we create economic vitality to rural Minnesota, and specifically in northwest Minnesota? And the University Extension did a economic study, which is part of your packet, and you can look at those numbers. I can answer questions, but we wanted to set the framework of what this project is and the relationship and the significance of working with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotional Council, the university, AURI, and then also Epitome Energy as part of this.
Please state your name and continue.
Committee Chairman and members, my name is Mike Skalg. I'm a soybean producer from Polk County. I've been in production agriculture for 38 years. I wanted to express some things on the view from the grower side of this proposal. One thing in the economic study, the report that, you know, there's a basis thing in there, and I just wanted to explain a little bit what basis means to growers in Minnesota. And it's mostly freight. But what it is there's several things in it, but like the futures price, like today's futures price for soybeans is $9.05. Currently, our local basis is 95 cents under that, or a negative. So the price to the growers would be $8.10. What this value-added thing would do would narrow that gap. Instead of 95 cents, you know, it's estimated to be 20 cents improvement, which would narrow it to 75 cents. Now, it doesn't seem like a big thing to most people, but to the growers in Polk County, you know, there's like 12 million bushels annually produced in Polk County. And I'll say it specifically for Polk County, but it would apply to any grower or any county in the Northwest, of course, that's producing soybeans. So that 12 million bushels of production at 20 cents improvement to the basis would amount to $2.4 million just in Polk County's production spread over the county, which would be a direct impact to the growers, and he could then spend it in the county in which he raised it. Now, Polk County is a very large county, and all the Northwest counties are large, but Polk County specifically has nearly 2,000 square miles of area. In contrast to that, the state of Rhode Island, you know, is something less than 1,300 square miles. And, you know, if the governor of Rhode Island were to say to his people that he could increase the revenue to his state by $2.4 million just by enhancing a market model, I think they would all be for it. And, you know, we can do that sort of thing even just for Polk County and the neighboring counties as well. So I think that's pretty significant. Now, in terms of the Inno, I call it the Inno Soy Campus, and small crush specialty oil facility, as growers of soybeans, we have had checkoff dollars, and you've heard of those before, go, and it's earmarked for research and development. And, you know, over the years, U of M has done a very great job of developing specialty oils from soybeans that have a specific need. And what we hope to do, or what this plant would do, would be able to process those things so that they could meet demand. There's many different things, and they just have so many unique properties. There's different non-allergenic oils. There's just all kinds of things for health and for livestock feed that would be advantageous for enhancing livestock growers through their feed and all this sort of thing. But it would be, it's a soybean that has genetically is different than what we do now. And what would be intriguing to the mid-sized grower of soybeans is that they would be able to contract with the company to raise some of these specialty oils and products. And they would have the capability to then, as their size, to, you know, keep it, the traits pure and all that sort of thing. And it would really be a win for the grower and for the area and for the new developments of specialty oils. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Please state your name and continue your testimony.
Good morning to the chair and the committee members. I'm Craig Hoyseth. I represent the city of Crookston as the Economic Development Authority. I just want to speak briefly to the impact that this would do for our community and the region around us. Obviously, you put in a facility this size in a community the size of Crookston, about 8,000 people. We see a generation of about 100 direct jobs going into this facility. That is not the support jobs, which could add a couple hundred more to that. During construction, we could see upwards of 800 jobs in the region. So we see this as a huge economic vitality issue. Ongoing, we do see tremendous collaboration with University of Minnesota Crookston. We really enjoy that partnership in our city. And we also house AORI and the Northwest Regional Outreach Center. So we have a lot of members that are interested to see this project go forward on a lot of different reasons, and obviously we'd like to see your support of that, and certainly appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much for your testimony.
That would be the presentation of the bill. Do members, anyone have questions or others?
Yeah. Members, do you have any questions for either the bill author or the testifiers? Yes, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Westlake was first. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, or maybe the testifiers, could help answer some of these questions. The language is pretty not specific in terms of what this funding is going to be doing. So I'm wondering if you could maybe talk specifically or give kind of some examples of what the incentives for this soybean processing would do, maybe immediately, and then for the future projects, what those might entail.
Chair, committee, what we're looking at is we have an opportunity to purchase used equipment for the small crush facility. So initially, that first year, part of that those dollars would be to secure that equipment, which is based in the southern United States. And then also, we were looking at utilizing some of that funding for infrastructure, to ensure that we can place that facility and keep moving that project forward. So that was really the two-year funding cycle that we were looking at for this project.
Representative Westlake, do you have a follow-up?
I'm wondering, I guess the bill language says other projects. Are there other things that are part of this facility or other things that could foresee this money being used for beyond that, or is it just specifically for the facility?
I think in terms of future use, one of the things that we're looking at with this innovation center is the opportunity to bring new businesses to the state of Minnesota based on what's currently being done and where some of those dollars are spent. There's companies currently, one called Sanos, that is actually taking glycerin, which is a byproduct of the biodiesel process, and turning that into a high-value feed. There's a Saronics, which is a renewable, some technology that's coming out of the University of Minnesota for high oleic soybean oil. So there's already things in the pipeline that we think by having that infrastructure in place will move these projects forward quicker.
Representative Westlake, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any sort of other partnerships going on in terms of providing funding for these projects as well?
Mr. Egan?
Absolutely, Chair, Committee Member. We are in that equity raise right now. We've been in conversations with two large co-ops in northwest Minnesota, also a organization down in North Dakota, all in terms of raising funds and equity for this project. So it's a $150 million project. Half of it is equity. Half of it will be debt financed.
Okay. Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Brand. I have a couple questions on just based on the how these generally roll forward, and I really like the plan and the soy innovation program is a really good thing for the state of Minnesota and once it gets up and running. But isn't this more appropriate in a deed funding scenario using Minnesota Investment Fund or Job Creation Fund as well as a bonding proposal? Is this something that really should be coming out of the ag budget?
Mr. Egan or Representative Keel? Or a friend? Or maybe staff?
Thank you. I'm going to let Mr. Bennett respond a little bit to this, but I do think it really enhances agriculture in Minnesota, and that's its real goal. So those are other options we could look at.
Mr. Bennett, state your name. Continue.
Mr. Chairman, Corey Bennett, representing the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. Representative Tapke, that's a good question, and I think that we're kind of looking at all pots of money, quite frankly. We are looking at some deed dollars to try to look at those economic development opportunities. We're hoping at some point there might be some bonding opportunities with the University of Minnesota Crookston and trying to get that soy innovation in an experiment with regards to the educational possibilities for this, upping and running as well. But we also think there's an agricultural component. Let's remember the agri dollars that are in there are old ethanol tails that were put in place or captured by the legislature for that next generation of biofuels or that next generation of looking at innovative bio types of solutions to value-added agriculture. So I think that it has a definite component here as well.
Representative Tapke, you said you had another question?
No, that okay. Answers my question, so thank you very much.
Representative Cleaveland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Keel, my question is this. Everybody in this room knows that I'm an avid fan of the Forever Green Project. I mean, it just makes my heart sing. So when we are looking at this being used for small grain crush equipment, is that something that could also be used for these other alternative high-value crop agricultural products?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, it will be. The small crush can be used in a variety of ways. It could be used for just general soybean crush if that's what they want to do. But it also can be used for those forever green types of cover crops, Kernza, pennygrass, all those things that we currently can't crush and that we currently can't add value to. This facility could do that. Hemp oil could be something that they could use it as well. So the small crush would be used on a variety of typical beans. I mean, it could be used with traditional, but it could also be non-GMO types of beans. But it also, like I said, can add value to all those cover crops and all those things that we're putting money into Forever Green. This crush facility could actually give that value back and create that marketplace that we currently don't have.
Mr. Egan?
Also, I'd like to add, Chair and Committee, the makeup and the structure, the business structure, will help facilitate that as well. The two larger components are part of Epitome Energy. The small crush facility is actually going to be a nonprofit organization governed by Minnesota Soybean Research, the University of Minnesota. Epitome Energy will be part of it. But the whole point of that is to ensure that when those crops need to be crushed, they have a place to come. Right now, to take some of those crops in other parts of the country, it's so cost prohibitive, and to just find time in some of those small crush isn't feasible.
Okay. I just have one. I know we have other bills. Sorry. I'm just concerned about the word that money must be used. I would prefer it to say money may be used because I would also like to see these dollars, these incentive programs for agricultural growth and research also be used for other crops that could benefit from this facility. I realize it's a competing interest, but it's something that I think it doesn't have to be either or, but it could be an and. And so I would ask, you know, Representative Keel if she would consider maybe changing that must to a may.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Cleburne, I'd like to have some more conversation with all the entities before we would do that. But the crush itself would already allow that opportunities. And the University of Minnesota is very active in Crookston in agriculture and this discussion. So I think I'd rather than changing language right now, I'd like to review that a little bit more. But I will certainly take that under consideration.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Keel, along the same lines of questioning, it says it must be used for an incentive program. We heard testimony asking for the dollars to be used for construction and startup costs, I believe. Are you proposing any type of production incentive program once it's up and operating?
Mr. Bennett?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, not at this point. We're not looking at that. Maybe something down in the future that could be a possibility, but at this point we are not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right. Great conversation. I would be remiss if I didn't ask if there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill. See no one. Representative Keel, if you would like to have the final words on your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, I thank you very much for listening to this proposal and hope we seriously consider this. I guess with that, I would just like to ask that it is included in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. House File 2123 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. All right, next is Representative Fabian. You're in the hot seat. House File 2357, I believe. 2527, sorry. And Mr. Representative Hamilton, would you like to move House File 2527?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House File 2527 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to present House File 2527. Nice to see the Commissioner of Agriculture here. I appreciate all the work you do. Members, House File 2527 is an appropriation of $108,000 per year for the next 2 years that would go to the Department of Agriculture for grants to the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. This appropriation is in line with what's been done in the past several years, not asking for any inflationary adjustment or anything like that. This is the same figure that's been used for probably 10 years to fund research that's going on with the Turf Seed Council. I have a testifier here, and on a personal note, Richard, a former student of mine back in the late 70s, and I didn't think that you could do anything better after a 4020 John Deere, but the first four-wheel drive tractor I ever drove was on the Magnuson Farm versatile tractor, and it was quite something. If there is a Mount Rushmore and Roseau for people who've been a significant influence in my life, I can honestly say that Richard's father, Yvonne, was one of those guys. This family is an amazingly innovative family. Richard started out farming 80 acres, doing labor for his dad on his farm and using his equipment to get started, and now he and his nephews are farming several thousand acres. But I think one of the most significant things that they do is the research that they do on their farm. The Magnuson Research Center that's there is a tribute to their family. They're very, very active at the University of Minnesota, at CFANS, and this is just an awesome entity that they've got going. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Richard Magnuson, please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Richard Magnuson. I'm current president of the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. I farm near Roseau, where I grow small grains, oil seeds, and various grasses for seed and forage. The Minnesota Turf Seed Council is comprised of a group of farmers, processors, and allied businesses that represent the turf seed industry in northwest Minnesota. The grass seed industry in northern Minnesota has a long history of turf seed production, starting with the initial appropriation of $35,000 to the University of Minnesota from the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Commission in 1948 to help develop the grass and legume seed industry. This investment helped the University of Minnesota develop the variety Park Kentucky Bluegrass, the first productive seed variety for northern Minnesota. Park Kentucky Bluegrass is still grown today in northern Minnesota and is still the specified bluegrass in Minnesota DOT mixes. So not many species of grass where we're still growing the same variety 70 years later, but that is the case. The success of the bluegrass industry started the production of many other species, including timothy, red top, red clover, birdswood trefoil, perennial ryegrass, and most recently tall and hard fescue. The introduction of perennial ryegrass to the marketplace has resulted in plantings of 50,000 acres in the area. As some of the other acres have slid off, perennial ryegrass has taken over. The gift of 40 acres for a permanent plot site in Roseau left a permanent program in northern Minnesota for research, not only in the grass seed industry, but also in as support to the wheat, barley, canola projects, and also a lot of the Forever Green project crops are tested in on that station in Roseau, Minnesota. There's three grass seed companies employing approximately 40 workers that have been created in Roseau and Lake Woods County to support the cleaning the seed for the market. Two of the companies are privately owned and one is a producer co-op. The grasses contribute heavily to the economy of the area and for those farmer growers. There's about $16 million in farm gate revenue generated from these crops. A factor of 7 is generally used to estimate the economic impact to the region. This would estimate the total impact to be $112 billion in economic activity to the region from these crops. The production of seed is very environmentally friendly. Some of these species are perennials or biennials and produce seed for up to 4 or 5 years. Consequently, the soil is not disturbed for years, and there's growth all growing season to prevent nutrient runoff. Again, the Kernza is part of the Forever Green, is one of the crops we're looking at. I'm one of three Kernza growers in Roseau County that have been working on this for the last 4 years. There's some research challenges there, no doubt. But again, the idea of perennial crops on the landscape, it not only helps farmers' income if they can be productive, but also it helps ensure weather risk. Perennial crops, when they're planted, we don't have to worry about planting in the spring. Our area of the world is notorious for flooding or excessive rain, and having perennial crops like we do now, perennial ryegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, helps us. We don't have to worry about getting out in the field after the flood planted. They're already in place. They're already growing. The seed produced in northern Minnesota helps to go on and solve environmental problems across the nation and world. These species are used for mine reclamation, prairie restoration, levee stabilization, nutrient filters, along with many other uses. This area holds much promise, and the university is currently working on a project that uses perennial crops, again, the Forever Green crops, in conjunction with corn and soybeans to prevent erosion and use the cover crop's ability to trap nutrients before they run off into the waterways. Perennial ryegrass is a relative newcomer to Minnesota, and the I'll move on quickly, but perennial is used primarily as an overseeding and dormant Bermuda grass in southern United States, so generally it's a high-use crop in the southern part of the United States. So just as the Iron Range Resource Rehabilitation Commission's investment in 1948 paid huge dividends to producers in the state, we believe continued investment by the state would pay huge dividends in the future.
Share your testimony, Mr. Magnus. Thank you. Do you have any other testifiers today?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else in the audience would like to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Representative Hamilton has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for the department. As it was pointed out, I believe we funded this through pass-through grants. And am I right about were those dollars included in the administration and financial assistance portion of the omnibus agriculture finance bill? And if so, are those dollars still available?
Okay, good question for the Department of Ag.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, Andrea Vauble, Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Ag. If I remember correctly, and I can double check, I think the last biennium, it was repurposed for some other usage within the budget. And so we just took the prior rider and moved that over. So so I think it was repurposed somewhere else in the budget, but I'd have to double check on where it was used.
Okay.
Maybe.
We might have an expert here that has an idea.
Mr. Chair and committee members, during the previous omnibus agriculture finance bill, the rider in the admin and financial assistance portion of the bill, the rider for the specific $108,000 appropriation was eliminated, but the base for the admin portion of the bill was not reduced or adjusted to maintain that. So the testifier is correct in that that could have been reapportioned somewhere else per the department's ability to do so.
Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And or it could be still be available for this program. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, the committee could do an amendment to reinsert this rider, but the department would have to then deal with if they had to use that money for another purpose. They would have to kind of figure out how that would work within their proposed budget or current budget.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Bob. We'll appreciate you being here as well. Representative Cleavorn has a question.
I'd ask the Deputy Commissioner to stay seated.
All right. So. Go for it.
In looking at the governor's proposal, I see that there is still some unspecified agreed dollars. Could those dollars be used for this type of project?
Deputy Commissioner Bobble.
Representative, or Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne, so the agreed dollars we work in consultation, or it's actually basically pass-through dollars to the University of Minnesota. It's kind of dependent upon what the university's needs are at that point. It's also used, for the most part, human capital, as it says in the language. So it's supposed to be for positions for the most part. So you'd have to ask the university that question, but I think for the most part, the funds are supposed to be used. They're outlined what they're supposed to be used for the most part, and then they're mostly for positions.
And then just because I'm trying to understand the full uses of these plans, and how about the AURI money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne, I couldn't speak for AURI money. That is not part of our department budget.
Okay.
So
you know, I'm going to go to the next acronym, the AGRI money.
Agri dollars.
Yeah.
Yes. So that, Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne, the agri dollars potentially could be used for that, dependent upon what activities the Turf Seed Council would be using it for.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Saver has a comment.
Mr. Chair and members, just to correct or clarify what I was saying earlier, in the prior budget bill, this particular appropriation was set to one time, and therefore there was no base in this budget cycle.
Thank you. Any other, Representative Tabke, real briefly.
I'll try. it's going to be fun to get mess with you in this role, but I'll do my best not to.
Really?
So, Representative Fabian, I just want to say thank you very much for bringing this forward. I think that any work that we can and continue to do on expanding perennial grasslands, especially for marginal cropland use, and continuing that work. So you as well, Mr. Was it Magnuson?
Yeah,
Mr. Magnuson. So just wanted to say thank you for that, and I hope that this money is included, whether it's through a GREET or whether it's through a general fund, that this is really important work that needs to continue.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the grass seed industry, as Richard said, goes way back in Roseau County, back into the 50s, and it's just been a tremendous opportunity. And I would also say that if I were to ask for a show of hands in this room, how many people have ridden in a combine and combine Kernza, I would guess it's just the two of us.
Yeah, you and I.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Fabian. House File 2527 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. Next up is House File 1796, and that would be Representative Hansen. And then, Representative Hansen, if you could start out, and then in that process here, we're going to get a couple of folks on deck. Looks like John Howell Pullis and Greg Mast. Get on deck for testimony.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 1796 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1796 authorizes retail electricity customers to subscribe to a community solar garden that is not located in the same county as the customer or in a contiguous county if the community solar garden has a minimum setback of at least 100 feet from the nearest residential property. In addition, it appropriates $150,000 one time from the general fund to the Department of Ag to report to the legislature by January 15, 2021, regarding the economic benefits to farmers and local farm economy that would result from eliminating the contiguous county restriction, which has been modified. And just one quick thing, I did talk with Mr. Ketseth with the Department of Agriculture, and they support the bill. And there are multiple testifiers, so we should probably start with them.
Continue with your first testifier.
Ms. Howell-Pullis? Or Mr. Mast?
There we go. Okay. Please state your name and continue with your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Greg Mast, and I am the Executive Director of Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. We are an industry-led nonprofit organization dedicated to growing and strengthening Minnesota's clean energy business ecosystem. Our membership is comprised of clean energy companies, ranging from startup businesses to Fortune 100 and 500 corporations who employ thousands of Minnesotans across the state. Today, I'm here to testify in support of House File 1796. I'd like to thank Representative Hansen for authoring this common sense bill that helps to expand rural economic development opportunities for farmers and local agricultural communities in greater Minnesota. Today, our state is home to over 59,000 clean energy jobs, and these jobs are growing two times faster than all other sectors of our state's economy, according to the 2018 Clean Jobs Midwest Report. Over the past year alone, renewable energy generation jobs, like those associated with community solar gardens, grew 16.5%, which was the highest rate of growth across the entire 12-state Midwest region. And this growth is bringing benefits to all corners of our state, as 40% of clean energy jobs reside throughout greater Minnesota. We're pleased to support this bill for three reasons. First, we support removing the contiguous county restriction and that it places an unnecessary barrier toward community solar garden development where they may be most useful for the grid, for farmers, and for the program subscribers. Second, advances in technology and business model innovations are driving down the cost of renewable energy like solar. In 2018, over 100 new community solar gardens were added to the state, according to the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And third, each of these installations is carefully negotiated with local farmers to best use their land in responsible ways and in the long-term benefit of the landowners. So studying the overall economic benefits is important in that it helps us to understand the total contributions provided to our state from community solar gardens. In closing, we support community solar gardens and the practical steps provided in House File 1796. Demand for clean, reliable, and affordable energy continues to increase, and this bill helps to address this demand. It will also unlock new opportunities to sustain and grow vital farm economies here in the state. Our organization looks forward to working with all of you and other stakeholders in the near term to move Minnesota towards a thriving and prosperous clean energy future. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Mast. I'll call down Will Georgia, and Rick Evans is on deck. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Will Georgia, Novel Energy Solutions. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. And thank you also to Representative Hansen for introducing this bill. Novel Energy Solutions is a local Minnesota solar energy development company founded in 2012 by our CEO, who's a fifth-generation farmer based out of St. Charles, Minnesota. So they've been in rural Minnesota for over 130 years. We're also a member of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association. And there's a number of key benefits about this bill, the biggest one being that it's going to help out balancing the rural city gap, economic gap. Because, you know, currently today, as we develop community solar gardens, these are facilities that we can we can build in 7 to 10 acres on land, and then we can find subscribers to sign up for the economic benefits of these gardens virtually. So it doesn't have to be on site on somebody's roof or, you know, in their backyard for them to benefit from this. But, you know, at the moment, a lot, the majority of community solar gardens are located in or near or around the metro area, because the contiguous county requirement makes it so that we have to locate projects around highly dense, highly populated areas. Now, there are a lot of viable sites for solar development out in rural Minnesota, but we currently can't go develop those because it's very difficult to find subscribers. So by removing this contiguous county requirement, there's a lot of opportunity to go out and develop more projects deeper into rural communities beyond what we've done already. And that's a real economic benefit for rural landowners out there, because they have an opportunity to really grow solar as another crop and, you know, get paid 2 to 3 times, you know, what their crop income could be for 25 years. So that's a really, it's a big fixed payment that can really benefit landowners. It gives the soil a temporary rest for 25 years to help it rejuvenate, because these are temporary projects. Doesn't disrupt conservation programs, and so that extra income helps a lot. And the other benefit is that opens up more projects to be developed and allows more people to sign up for community solar and save money. And really, at the end of the day, the third benefit is that there's nobody who's made worse off by this rule change. It really just opens up more opportunities for rural landowners and more people to sign up for solar. So we'd very much urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. James Pearson, come on down. Please state your name and for the record, and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Pearson. I work with Xcel Energy. I see I've got help from a friend. We wanted to share a couple of our comments about the community solar program for the committee's consideration. Rick Evans often testifies in this role, and he is doing so over in the House as I'm pitch hitting for him. The first point I wanted to make sure people were aware of is that Chair Wagenius and her committee have spent quite a bit of time on solar gardens this session, and Representative Long has a bill that is being heard by that committee right now. There are a number of issues that have come up through the legislative session so far about the program. We instituted or kicked the program off as a result of 2013 legislation, and we've learned a lot along the way. And so one of the primary concerns we have with the bill in front of us here, House File 1796, is it pulls out one piece of the conversation and moves it along a separate path outside of the comprehensive solar garden reform conversation going on in the Energy Committee. So I wanted to make sure members were aware of that. Another concern we have with the bill is Section 2 talks about doing a study about what the impact of making this change might be and delivering that study in 2021, but Section 1 of the bill makes the change. And so it seems odd to us that we would make a change and then study what the impact might be and report several years down the line. So we would ask for some further thought on that point. A couple other things I wanted to point out is we've heard testimony about the opportunity for rural Minnesotans versus metro Minnesotans. So the one thing I did want to make clear to the committee, and this is the map that was just distributed, that map is just a simple map of the state and the utility service territories within the state of Minnesota. So I think as the committee is aware, since the 70s have defined service territories, and each utility in that territory has the obligation to serve. Solar gardens are unique to Xcel Energy. Most utilities do have a program, but our program is structured differently. And so if you are going to construct a garden, that garden has to be physically located in this light green color on your map. And so what that does is, by looking at the map, is you can see where some rural communities who happen to be in Xcel Energy Service territory are, they may have the opportunity to lease land for the physical construction of the gardens. If you are a farmer outside of a green shaded area, which is the vast majority of the state, you do not have that opportunity. So there is some pushback from our perspective about how these benefits would be shared. When utilities like Xcel Energy invest in utility scale solar, we go through the PUC and that siting and permitting process. We are not bound by those restrictions. So I would argue that utility investments in utility scale solar provide more opportunity, more uniform opportunity to rural or greater Minnesota than the language in front of you. One thing I wanted to point out, too, in terms of the economics of solar gardens, they are very expensive. We are mandated by the state to buy the energy coming off those gardens at a PUC-determined price. And so when we talk about winners and losers, there are impacts on people as a result of the cost. The cost does not come from Xcel Energy. The cost to pay for that energy comes from our customers. And so one person's savings is another person's cost. And so as we have these conversations, you can see there's lots to it. There's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of things that we've learned in implementing the program over the last 4 years. And so, again, we're asking for that comprehensive conversation to occur in the Energy Committee with Representative Long and others and kind of contain the discussion so everybody is participating in it rather than running bills like this one that take a piece of that and push it in a different direction. So, Madam Chair, appreciate the opportunity to speak and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. We're going to probably move on to the next testifier. We've got a couple more people, and we're going to be running out of time here. So we're going to try and speed it up a little bit. So we've got Ryan Finnegan and Stu Laurie. Have both of you come forward if you want to testify on this bill. And I think we'll be trying to wrap this up in the next couple of minutes. We've got to get through a couple more things. So if you come down quickly to the Mr. Laurie, come to the, yep,
all right.
Go ahead. And
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stu Laurie. I'm the incoming Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll keep this brief, but appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of this legislation. I talked to one of our members this morning about his support for this legislation and the opportunities that he sees for farmers who are within Xcel's territory and are currently unable to participate in this program. And what he described is the opportunity to increase on-farm income, diversify those income sources, and create some economic resiliency for the farm, and essentially put that 8 to 10 acres that it takes to install the solar garden in a essential conservation project that guarantees that income for the next 25 years. So this is a significant opportunity for those farmers that this legislation would make it available to, and removing the continuous county restriction would give them more opportunity to participate. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Mr. Abbey? We have Mr. Abbey here. Otherwise, thank you. Welcome to the committee and provide your testimony. Say your name and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Ross Abbey with U.S. Solar. I want to thank Representative for bringing this bill forward. I think it is a critical bill for simply expanding the benefits of this program. This bill, it should be said, doesn't change any aspects of the utility energy regulatory piece. There is a rate paid to subscribers, but it's already enshrined in statute. It's already put in place by the Public Utilities Commission, and this bill wouldn't change any of those things.
So if you just were to state your name, please. I'm not sure if you did. But
oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Ross Abbey.
Thank you.
With U.S. Solar. My apologies. Just to reference a couple of things, and then I want to also give time for the farmer host that drove in from Lent Township. In terms of the study, whether it should be done before or after the change, it is a chicken or egg issue with this bill, because right now we simply can't get the capital to finance these 1 megawatt, 7 to 10 acre projects in the rural communities. The reason is, and this was an unintended consequence, I think, of the 2013 law, is that after the law went into effect, the commission put a penalty in place on these facilities in case if they're not 100% subscribed when they first turn on day one. So that increased the risk to capital finance. Each of these projects is about $2 billion worth of investment into the local community, and we're seeing them go in. There's 180 so far built around the state, all just within Xcel territory. Expecting 250 of these sites may build around the state by the end of the year, but again, just in the metro. So this is really allowing it to expand and then studying the benefits of that expansion. I think it'd be hard to study the benefits to the local community before you allow at least some of these projects to go forward. USOR, we have pledged to use pollinator-friendly grasses and wildflowers in 100% of our Minnesota sites. And I know that's another benefit we're hoping to articulate for the ag community, as those pollinator refugees potentially could help support nearby specialty crops, vegetables, fruits, squash, those sort of things.
Thank you, Mr. Abbey. All right, so we've got two more presenters, and we're going to give them each a minute. Frankly, we really run on time. David Schweitz and Colleen Hollinger, if they're here and would like to be able to very briefly speak to this bill. Welcome to the committee and state your name and provide your testimony.
Hi, Chair and committee members. I'm David Schweitz. I'm a landowner in Chisago County. I'm just going to give a little bit of background on how I got into this program. We had land sitting in a family trust for quite a while, and because of the wetland on the property, it had really been sitting fallow for a number of years. When I learned about the solar opportunities, I also reached out to U.S. Solar to figure out what to do with the land, and being a clean energy advocate, I sort of learned and became educated. We put up the solar farm, which just really was completed this past spring. There was a lot of investment in the habitat, which once spring is here, hopefully someday we'll see that that happening. But it is an opportunity for me as a landowner that I wouldn't have had before. Again, the land was pretty hard to figure out what to be used for, and now it's a neat thing to see happening here in the coming months.
Thank you.
Yep.
Ms. Hollinger?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Colleen Hollinger, and I'm with Prairie Restorations. We're headquartered in Princeton, Minnesota, and we have 7 office sites around the state of Minnesota. We employ almost 150 people around the state, and we employ a lot of farm college graduates. We like how hard farm kids work. This revised bill, by allowing more solar sites, by removing the contiguous county restriction, supports long-term good paying jobs for our employees. It provides with greatly increased opportunity for long-term ag leases for farmers, particularly in outstate Minnesota. And if they're planted with native pollinator-friendly habitat, it will increase critical native habitat for native butterflies and insects, songbirds, game birds, and supports the growth of small businesses, especially in outstate Minnesota. It serves to preserve and improve ag land for the length of the solar land lease. And I really believe that we're not just increasing solar capacity, we're leaving native habitat legacy and farm family legacies for the next 25 years. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, closing comments?
In addition to what everybody has said, I think it's important to realize that there are avoided costs of maintaining the traditional carbon infrastructure. By doing solar and enhancing solar, it helps reduce the carbon. We cannot avoid the climate changes here, and we are going to have to reduce carbon. And this is a way in one Minnesota to make it happen.
All right. And I know we do have a question. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to comment. I've heard testimony that there are very few of these out in rural Minnesota. Well, out around where I live, there was an article in the paper just last week. A resident said he had 3 of these solar farms within a half a mile of where he lived, and he wanted the county to do something to put up fences or whatever around these things because he said they're, I think the word he used was ugly. There's a lot of them out there, and I hear talk about expanding benefits, economic benefit. You know, the price of solar was 14.7 cents. I think it's down to 12 cents now, but it's an expensive way to generate electricity, and there are a lot of these solar farms out in rural areas, and I just want to make that comment, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen or Mr. Abbey?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, Representative, I can speak briefly. I don't think those are our projects. There are still about five or six developers based here in Minnesota doing these 1 megawatt smaller projects. I would just say that we, as a developer, we do work very closely with the local land use authority, be it the county or the township. Different jurisdictions have different practices and different restrictions, but it's certainly within their ability to require fences, require farm-style fences, and to make those determinations at the local level.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe my question is to the author. We have a number of wind towers in the district that I serve, and one of the benefits on why that works is there's a production tax, and the counties, townships can benefit. The schools used to. That was taken away. But is there anything like that as far as these solar panels? The other question that I have, or these solar gardens, the other question is it was talked about a number of times about land lease or the benefits to the farmer. What are the details around that? What benefit is it to the farmer?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think two things. There's a benefit in that contract where if there is, you're providing that energy, probably more energy than you may actually need, so it goes back to the grid with if you have the opportunity to do that, so you've got the contract. I know I just am putting solar on one of our sheds, and so we have a contract that will help pay off that implementation cost. So that's just on for our farm and electricity use, but also paying that off because of the electricity that's generated. I was thinking of the discussions that we've had over wind over the years that we've been here together, and this is a very similar discussion. I think the difference is in terms of the tax credit. The last time we modified the solar language, we put a goal in, and we've seen this flourishing, this bloom of solar because of the action that we've taken in the legislature on putting that 1%, I think, or the minimum, and then also having the PUC work with all the people that are here on developing the price of solar and having discussions about that.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Well, just follow up or a comment. You know, I believe the reason the towers are working out in our area is because there is a local benefit. And if that tax, production tax is taken away, I don't think you'll build another another wind tower in the district that I serve because of you'll lose the local support. So that's why I'm wondering if there's a local component here when it comes to the solar garden.
And to answer that question in 30 seconds, please, whoever's going to answer it. Mr. Abbey?
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly there is. Every time you put in one of these solar farms or solar gardens, the land is taxed at a commercial rate instead of an ag rate. So you're increasing the tax base at the local level. Now, the developers pay that increase. It's not on the farmer or the land host. That's on the developers. So that's just one of many ways. And the bill studies those ways that the benefits get out there as well.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for the presentation. House File 1796 will be laid over for possible inclusion. All right, so Representative Lippert, we're going to bring you up with your testifiers. And then Representative Papp, he's on deck. So Representative Lippert, this is House File 1616. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I move House File 1616 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Thank you. Present your bill and introduce your witness, please.
Thank you. So this bill allocates $100,000 in fiscal year 2020 and $100,000 in fiscal year 2021 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Ag for a grant to Greater Mankato Growth for assistance to ag-related business to promote jobs, innovation, and development. Of a coordination of this economic development in Minnesota. So with me is Sam Ziegler, who can say more about GreenSeam, a more appropriate name for Greater Mankato Growth, their work, and the ways that this funding would fit with their overall economic development work.
Mr. Ziegler, welcome to the committee. State your name and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my name is Sam Ziegler. I'm the director of GreenSeam.
I want to, you know, tell you a little bit about here, and I'll keep it brief because I know you're short on time here. So Green Seam is a nonprofit organization founded just a short couple years ago and is a part of Greater Mankato Growth. We're dedicated to ensuring that agriculture will fuel economic growth in southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, and committed to developing this region to be known nationally, internationally as a place for talent, business, innovation, education in regards to agriculture. Minnesota has two industry clusters that you will recognize, the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board and Destination Medical Center, both of which currently receive support from the state. I'd like to share some successes we have had around talent development so far. Minnesota State University Mankato is looking to bridge some gaps that we have in the region with students with the College of Business and the College of Sciences adding an ag industry minor. Junior Achievements Farm America and Green Seam have formed a partnership for 7th and 8th graders to see the career pathways of agriculture. Mankato School District has not had an ag program in over 25 years, and with the support of the Southern Minnesota Center of Ag and Green Seam, and by engaging industry, improving the impact on that region, they'll now offering ag classes for this fall, and they have two classes full. The legislation we're talking about is we're a five-year strategic initiative that we have launched, and we've been developing over the past couple of years. This last fall, we tested it with 84 businesses and community leaders. And additional work right now is being fine-tuned on the plan of work, which includes the state of Minnesota being a partner. We have more than currently 950 agriculture-associated businesses from transportation, distribution, professional services, ag-related manufacturing, processing, research, and education, and which employ nearly 100,000 individuals across our region, which is 28% of our workforce. This does represent a $36 billion economic activity, nearly half of all in the region currently. It also equals $10 billion of value-added impact dollars each year, which is 34% of our economy in the region. However, agriculture and agribusinesses face compounding challenges that include aging workforce, shrinking rural communities, depressed commodity prices, and outdated infrastructure. And agribusiness, we believe, is the catalyst to revitalizing rural Minnesota, and Green Seam wants to help make that happen. Today, our focus is on the talent development, regional branding, business expansion, and creation. And like Representative Lippert said, this is seeking $100,000 for each of the next 2 years, which is about 5% of our funds that we're looking at. And so Green Seam is connecting and engaging industry employers with our education and partnership. And this is modest in funding, but it's critical impact knowing that the state of Minnesota is partnering with agriculture and southern Minnesota to fill these gaps and help our long-term community prosperity.
Thank you, Mr. Ziegler. We have a question. Representative Brand.
I just wanted to state thanks a lot for talking about this bill today, and I just wanted to point out today that we're also in the presence of some folks from the Mankato Business Leadership Institute who are also here today, so just wanted to shout out to them as well.
Thank you. Representative Wozlewek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about some language in the bill. I'm just unclear about what it means on line 1.9, development of a synergy. I don't quite understand what that means. If someone could maybe clarify what that means.
Mr. Ziegler.
Thank you. So what it means is how do we better align our existing resources and partnerships? And agriculture is not always seen as an economic driver. It's seen as farmers, but it's so much more than that. As some previous testimonies talked about, innovation in agriculture does drive jobs. And so agriculture can provide that synergy and collect from our colleges to our high schools and our businesses to better align and connect and work together and align our communities to work together. As individual communities don't have the power to be recognized as a regional brand, but together we can do that. And so we have many communities that we're currently partnering with.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Any other testifiers from in support or in opposition to this bill? All right. Thank you, Representative Lippert. Any closing comments? And then
I just urge support for this. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay. And so House File 1616 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you for coming down, Mr. Ziegler. Appreciate that. And so now we're moving to House File 2293, Representative Tabke. Please present.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 2293 to be included in the finance possible inclusion for the finance omnibus bill.
Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. This is a very simple bill that will allow 500 senior, and this is from the Department of Ag. This will allow 500, around 500 seniors and folks with disabilities who every year currently pay $50 a year for a non-commercial applicator license to pay a reduced fee of $10 a year for a non-commercial applicator license fee in order to spray wasp nests in playgrounds and weeds in cracks at rest areas throughout the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Tabke. Representative Tabke. Just a couple of things. One is that this was a bill that was heard last year, right? I think that, and last year the fiscal note came back that there was no cost initiative because it had a minimal number of licenses, and so it was kind of not an expensive thing to do.
And Madam Chair, we got the fiscal note this morning for it, and that is consistent again this year. So there is $0 in the fiscal note for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. Are there any questions, comments? Do you have any presenters, testifiers?
Nope.
All right, very good. And I think unless Representative Keel or somebody else has a question, I think then Representative Tabke, if you will, any closing comments? And
nope, thank you very much, Ms.
What Madam you'd Chair. Like to do? Okay, House File 2293 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, thanks to the final testifiers for speeding things up to get us back on track. Just as an FYI, we will have some meetings next week, and we'll be busy again next week, probably on Tuesday for sure. And we are looking to try to wrap up these the finance bill very shortly, so we will have a target by Monday. We'll know what we've got to deal with. We'll be preparing the bill, and so look for that on the horizon. That will be coming. So with seeing nothing further before the committee, meeting adjourned.